Dr. Ben Aldiss brings us his A to Z of nature with the letter Z.
In my final month of this A to Z of Norfolk wildlife, I'm faced with the last of those letters that appear to have no wildlife associated with them. But, as with Q, X and Y, there are some interesting topics beginning with Z. One of them is the word zygomorphic, a botanical term from the two words of Greek, literally meaning twin shape. It describes the bilateral symmetry of certain flowers found in both the countryside and in our gardens, and reflects the co-evolution of flowering plants and their insect pollinators. It seems that these two major groups began to adapt to each other in the Cretaceous period between 145 and 66 million years ago. In those far-off days, the Earth's atmosphere was very different from the current one. If we think global warming and the greenhouse effect are modern afflictions, just imagine what life would have been back then, with about four times more carbon dioxide, 10% more oxygen, and with average global temperatures a good 4 degrees Celsius above current levels. The world was a hot and steamy place, ideally suited to plants and insects. The original pollinators were probably rather clumsy beetles that happened to discover a handy source of protein-rich pollen in the big saucer-shaped flowers of plants such as magnolia. These were among the first to evolve flowers specifically adapted to attract insects as pollinators, rather than depending on the vagaries of the wind to spread their pollen. Magnolia and other familiar modern species like buttercups and anemones have a simple form of symmetry called actinomorphic or radial, in which the flowers are wheel-shaped with the petals radiating out from the center. Pollination in these plants is relatively easy, requiring no special features on behalf of the insect go-between. But it does leave the process open to abuse. Any old insect can blunder onto the flower, and pollination may or may not take place, depending on the size of the fly, beetle or wasp that happens to turn up. Also, it is entirely feasible for a visitor to rob the flower of pollen without actually pollinating it. Unless it lands on the stigma of the flower, pollen can't trigger fertilization and no seeds will be produced, so evolution gradually favored flowers that developed an intricate shape, geared to particular insects, and which forced them to deposit pollen in the correct place. The classic example of one of these is the garden snapdragon and its wild relative, the toadflax, in flower at the moment in our hedgerows. Both plants have zygomorphic flowers that are only symmetrical in the vertical plane. If you cut their flowers from top to bottom, the two halves are mirror images of each other. So how does this bilateral symmetry of its flower benefit the plant? Well, as I implied earlier, it restricts entry, so only certain beneficial insects can access the pollen. The intricate shapes and mechanisms that this form of symmetry allows plants to impose on their flowers hugely increases the chance of effective pollinization. So how does this bilateral symmetry of its flower benefit the plant? Well, as I implied earlier, it restricts entry, so only certain beneficial insects can access the pollen. The intricate shapes and mechanisms that this form of symmetry allows plants to impose on their flowers hugely increases the chances of effective pollination. If you've ever watched insects trying to get into a snapdragon flower, you'll have realized that only the very biggest bumblebees are strong enough to prise open the two lips. Once inside, the bee is then exactly the right size and shape to brush its back over the overhanging stamens as it pushes to reach the nectar in the base of the flower. The result is a dusting of pollen that can be transferred to the stigma when the bee visits another snapdragon. Each pollen grain contains a male sex cell that can then fertilize the equivalent female one in the ovary of the flower, ultimately producing a viable seed. There are many zygomorphic flowers in the Norfolk countryside. Four groups of plants in particular specialize in these complicated blooms. They are the pea, mint, snapdragon, and orchid families. All of them have flowers shaped to encourage certain insects while excluding others. The foxglove is a familiar relative of the snapdragon and has flowers beautifully adapted for visits by bumblebees. Each thimble-shaped flower hangs downwards and has a hairy throat to make it difficult for small insects to climb up. Dark spots at the flower entrance are there as signposts, directing the bee to the correct point of entry. Many zygomorphic flowers have these so-called nectar guides, signaling the way to this sugary secretion that acts as a powerful attractant to insects and ensures that they make return visits. This way, pollination is assured, much less random than in grasses and many trees that rely on the uncertainties of the wind to achieve this vital task. Nectar guides are often responsible for the patterns on petals that help make them so attractive to us, but a lot are visible only to bees and butterflies with their ultraviolet vision. Among the many relatives of the mint family, we have two relatively uncommon salvias in Norfolk, relatives of sage and rosemary, and some brightly coloured garden flowers. Wild clary and meadow clary both have striking deep blue flowers, and they play the same trick on their pollinating bees. The lower lip is the perfect landing platform, allowing the bee to perch securely before it extends its tongue in search of nectar at the base of the long tubular flower. The act of doing so operates a lever which causes the anthers to hinge downwards and drop pollen on the bee's back. Only an insect of this size and bulk can cause this mechanism to work. A few days later, the anthers shrivel, exposing the now mature stigma. A returning bee now triggers the descent of the stigma instead, its receptive surface touching the bee exactly where the pollen from a different clary flower was deposited some time earlier. But what about the radially symmetrical flowers? Are they still as primitive as they were back in the days before insects evolved as pollinators? Well, some seem to have changed very little, the magnolias and buttercups, for instance. But others have developed tricks of their own, equally as cunning as those of some of their bilaterally symmetrical cousins. I'll finish by describing one, the cheery and very common dandelion. A dandelion flower seems to typify the simple geometry of the actinomorphic or radial design. But take a closer look. What appears to be a single flower is in fact a cluster of hundreds of much smaller ones, gathered together to make a brighter, more attractive display. Even so, the chances of pollination could still be low, as the collection of flowers, known as a capitulum, suffers from the same design faults that led to the evolution of the more efficient zygomorphic plant. The dandelion has an ingenious fallback strategy, though. Each tiny flower has a tubular stamen through which the two-pronged stigma projects. Initially, while the stamen sheds its pollen, the stigma is unreceptive, its two prongs being tightly closed together. This measure reduces the chance of self-pollination. Visiting insects unwittingly carry some of the pollen to other dandelions that may be further advanced. In their case, the anthers are still shedding pollen, but the two prongs of the stigmas have unfurled, presenting their receptive surfaces to pollen from insects arriving from other flowers. Any flower that misses this opportunity for cross-pollination doesn't lose out, though. The prongs of the stigmas eventually curl backwards and touch the pollen of their own anthers, allowing self-pollination. Even this is not the end of the story, though. If, for any reason, the dandelion flower has missed the opportunity for either cross or self-pollination, as a last resort, a remarkable process called apomixis takes place. It's a form of reproduction without sex, in which a seed develops spontaneously. This succession of reproductive strategies explains why the familiar dandelion clock always seems to be full of seeds, their parachutes ready to carry them away at the slightest breath of wind. No wonder the dandelion is such a successful weed. Over 2 years since I wrote A for Apple, this piece rounds off my alphabetical look at the nature of Norfolk. How times have changed! If there's one thing this virus has achieved, though, it's a greater appreciation of nature. Good luck, everybody. Stay safe.